Station.
Radio has changed our lives and practically saved our lives.
Everybody, listen carefully.
This guy gets it.
Radio has changed our lives and practically saved our lives.
I'm Matt Duchesne of the Nashville Predators.
I'm Roman Josi of the Nashville Predators.
I'm Ryan Johansson of the Nashville Predators.
I'm Eustace Aros of the Nashville Predators.
I'm Rocco Grimaldi of the Nashville Predators.
And you're listening to the Renegades of Puck.
Broadcasting live from the Nashville Sports Radio Studios. And against all better judgment, this is Predneck Nation Radio.
Everybody loves the soldiers until they come home and stop fighting.
The Renegades of Puck are ready to take you on an all-skate around the NHL with all the news, highlights, scores, and more.
This is Pete Weber, the Nashville Predators,
and you're listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie.
Welcome to Smashville.
Everybody, it's time for another episode of Predneck Nation Radio. That's right, the Renegades of Puck are in the trenches this morning. I am your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Sonier. Welcome into Predneck Nation Radio. Mastrodamas will be up in the second period. Sean C. Smith will be joining me in the third period. Brian Bastin's got your one big stat. We'll close out the show. And the ultimate one, the ultimate predator, will get you all fired up before the end of this year first period. If you're listening out there in Middle Tennessee, we sure do appreciate you doing that over 560 AM and 95.9 FM. Bringing you the best sports coverage in Middle Tennessee for over 25 years now. We also appreciate you listening on 107.9 as you're headed through Smyrna and into the borough. 103.9 Drakesboro, Kentucky. That's on the FM dial, of course. They help us get into Owensboro, Bowling Green, Clarksville. They help us reach a lot of different places, but nothing helps us reach more people than WNSR.com, streaming the show completely live and 100% for free. And a fantastic media partner for 10 years now here with Renegades of Puck and Predneck Nation Radio. So WNSR.com has that live stream. It also on the Predneck Nation Radio page has access to all information about this here radio show, including links to get our merchandise, also how to listen to previous shows, 500 plus of them in the book so far, and also information about how you can reach out and contact the show. So make sure to check it out, WNSR.com. One more plug and one more way to listen to this station completely for free, the WNSR app. All you got to do is search Nashville Sports Radio in any of your app stores, and you will find that app completely free for you to download, and allows you to take the show anywhere in the universe. Take the Renegades of Puck with you wherever you go. You want to make sure you're checking us out live at 5 on game days or whenever the hell we feel like jumping in the trenches and taking on over this here fine radio station. They gave me an alarm code, a key, and I'm one of the only people that knows how to operate the board successfully, so I'll be here doing what I want to do when I want to do it, and the Renegades of Puck will have something to do with all of that. Let's get right to it. Tonight, the Nashville Predators begin their second two-game set of the year against division rival the Florida Panthers. You say division rival Florida Panthers, how in the hell can that be? Well, remember, we are in kooky times in hockey, and now the Nashville Predators are in a division with Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Florida. So, something you've gotten used to by this point. After all, we are nearly at the midpoint of this 56-game season, and the two-game sets, I'm still trying to keep an open mind and develop an opinion, but they're not exactly flowing the way I had anticipated they would throughout the season so far. I don't see a lot of buildup over Game 1 into Game 2, and I see a lot of these situations being where, frankly, Game 2 is not as crisp, and it's just not as good, and it's not as interesting. Maybe that's just me as a viewer watching the same team twice in a row. Maybe I'm just checking out a little bit when it comes to the concept of this 56-game shortened season and the format which it's going. I like seeing the other teams from across the league. I like talking about the other teams from across the league, but this is exactly what we have to deal with for the rest of this season. Already nearly the halfway point, and the Nashville Predators find themselves in sixth place as we start action today. 22 games played, a record of 10-12. The Predators have 20 points. That has them 10 points behind tonight's opponent, the Florida Panthers, and 11 points behind first place Tampa Bay and also Carolina, each with 31 points apiece. The Nashville Predators on home ice are 7-5-0. The Florida Panthers, an impressive record on the road, 6-1-1. And Joel Quenneville has his Florida Panthers team competing each and every night. Spent some time watching the Panthers over the last few games that they played, and they are impressive. They're big, they're physical, they're strong, and they love to get the puck to the net, get down low, and let Patrick Hornquist and others engage and put the puck in the net on secondary opportunities. The Florida Panthers have put the puck in the net 67 times on the season while giving up 60. The Nashville Predators, still one of the worst-looking numbers you can find in the Central Division, 51 goals for only Detroit or Dallas at 17 games played. So five less games played than the Nashville Predators is the only team in the division that has less goals than the Preds at this point in the season. Matter of fact, when you look at the league rankings, 2.27 is where the Nashville Predators sit in goals for per game. That's 28th. Do you say best in the league when you're that far down? The goals against for the Preds, 3.09, has them at 23rd in the league. So obviously both of those metrics are in the bottom one-third of the NHL in its entirety. Shots for and shots against, the Nashville Predators are in the top 10 in both of these categories. 32.2 shots on net is fifth best in the league, and 29.1 shots against is ninth best in the league. But are those shots coming at high danger areas, and are they coming at the right times? Of course, Brian Bastin and the rest of the Renegades will help fill in those details as we go along. Looking over at the shots for 34.5 for this Florida Panthers team, that's first in the NHL. I told you, they like to get the pucks in the net, and they like to work those secondary and those third and those fourth scoring opportunities, and they will absolutely just bring the jam to the top of your crease if you are not ready to go in this one. Their shots against 30.7, 19th in the league, plays a little bit into what the Preds' strong suit has been putting shots on net. But again, it's not about quantity. It is about quality. So sometimes this particular statistical category can be misleading. A statistical category that is not misleading at all is the power play. 18.7% conversion rate for this Nashville Predators team on the season. 14 out of 75. That has them at 19th. That is moving up. That is trending in a good direction. They've moved into the middle third of the league, which they've been in the bottom third of the league this entire season. So the Nashville Predators have now converted 14 times. This Florida Panthers team is 10th in the league, converting at 25%, 15 times out of 60 opportunities. Florida Panthers penalty kill is 19th in the league, while the Preds penalty kill is 29th in the league. The 21 power play goals against by the Preds is the worst in the NHL. They've only closed out 52 out of 73 penalty kill opportunities on the season. That seems like a lot of opportunities. The Preds, at least, I do have to give them credit. The number of penalties per game, the number of penalty minutes, the number of power play opportunities against has decreased in recent play. Some of that was helped by the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Detroit Red Wings, and the Preds weren't chasing the game, and they weren't dealing with such high speed and high impact and high power teams. We'll see if that trend can continue. I hope it does for the Nashville Predators, because that was something in the early part of the season that was just absolutely maddening. It might have even been worse than that. The season series between these two teams, they met twice already this season, two of the eight regular season matchups. This will be number three tonight. Saturday will be number four. We'll see them again on the 18th and the 20th of March when the Preds are off to Florida again, and they'll wrap up the season series later in April when Florida comes back here to Bridgestone Arena. When they met earlier in this season, it was back on February the 4th. If you remember, one of the more fun games this season for the Nashville Predators, it was a 6-5 overtime win. UC Saros, 19-24, got pulled out of that game after two periods. Pekka-Rinne comes in, goes 12 out of 12, and ends up getting the win. It was Philip Forsberg, two goals and three assists, putting himself in a very high-profile spot in Nashville Predators history with 5 points in that game. Matt Duchene, also, two of his goals came in this game. And if you remember, going back to it, it was Coach Quenneville making the challenge at the end of the game that just gift-wrapped the Nashville Predators an additional power play and allowed them to come back, and it was a highly impressive comeback. Yeah, we had a lot of fun because the Preds had kissed first place for just a couple of seconds right before that, but it would start to collapse pretty quickly after that. And the next game in Florida would not go the Predators' way. They'd fall 2-1. Pekka Rinne would go 34 out of 36 in that game. Colton Sissons, one goal, the only goal for the Nashville Predators. Just taking a quick look at the Panthers and their most recent action. I'll go back five games for you. And we'll talk about on the 22nd of February, they had a 3-1 win versus Dallas. They followed that up with a 3-0 loss versus Dallas. And they followed that up with a 3-2 win versus Dallas. Of course, the Dallas Stars, because of all of the difficulties they've had with weather, with ice storms, with COVID, they have had troubles getting on the ice, period, this season. So you're going to see the Dallas Stars popping up in some very odd places as we move forward in the schedule, including the Preds having a makeup game with the Dallas Stars Sunday, which will start a road trip in Dallas, then at Carolina, then at Tampa Bay. That's we'll get into that meat grinder with the Renegades here in a little bit. But I promised you the previous five. I told you three. Let me pick that back up on the 27th of February. It was a 4-3 shootout loss versus the Carolina Hurricanes. And of course, we just saw the Canes. And the most recent game was a 3-2 overtime loss versus Carolina. The Florida Panthers were down in the third period. They came back. They got a lead. They gave up the lead. They lost that thing in OT. But the Florida Panthers cannot be taken lightly. Maybe before the season started, we didn't anticipate them being as part of the top three in the division. But after 21 games played at 13-4-4 with 30 points, you have to give them absolute credit for how quickly Coach Quenneville has been able to turn things around there in Florida with the Panthers. I'll tell you right now, after watching that Panthers and Hurricanes game the other night, that's going to be one hell of a playoff series if those two teams end up facing off against each other. That's something I can get very excited about. There's some very good high-quality teams at the top of this division, and the Preds are about to face each and every one of them in the upcoming weeks of the schedule. We're going to find out exactly what this team is made up. Unfortunately for the Preds, there are some difficulties. The injury report is beginning to get extensive, and unfortunately, the names are becoming all too recognizable. Now, Ryan Ellis, we talked about that the other morning going into the show. I was concerned when he left the ice. He was definitely had an issue after taking a puck up in the arm, wrist, hand area. It's listed as an upper body injury. Of course it is. He's going to be out at least 2 to 4 weeks. He's on injured reserve. We're also seeing Johansson is out on the COVID list. Luke Cunningham is out. Lucas Sabiza is on IR. UC Saros is now day-to-day. That's something we're going to talk about throughout this episode. I felt like that was a dirty hit by Nino Niederreiter when it came to going to the head. UC Saros comes out of that game after the first period. It's listed as an upper body injury and also listed as day-to-day, but I'm highly concerned about that. And I'm also concerned about how the league just, again, does not handle its business. And that's going to lead to a problem between the Nashville Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes coming up probably on the 9th of March or on the 11th of March in Carolina. So that injury report starting to get very long for this Nashville Predators team, and that puts them in a very tight spot. Very difficult to consider what they're going to be doing going forward. The significant uptick in competition, as well as having these players out of the lineup. But listen, players out of the lineup, injuries, that's all part of this sport. That's all part of hockey, and that's a part of every season. So right now, just like we saw famously years ago when the Predators had half the AHL lineup step up in the chicken soup game, it's time for everybody who gets an opportunity to step up. There's no woe is me in the NHL or professional sports. You have a farm system, you have draft picks, you have a taxi squad, and you have players that are supposedly very hungry and want an opportunity. Well, here's your opportunity, fellas, because there's going to be a lot of players that are going to be out of the lineup, and you might start seeing some other players start to get moved, because right now, the trade value on a couple of those assets that are probably going to be moved are getting pretty high up there, and I wouldn't sit around and wait too long while they face off against Dallas, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Florida over the next 2 weeks to see their stock start to devalue just a little bit. For this Carolina Panthers, or for this Florida Panthers team, next up for them after they finish this two-game set with the Preds, they will head off to Carolina. Injury report for Florida, Duclair, IR, Forsling is out, and Juleson is listed as on IR. Stats for the Nashville Predators. Phil Forsberg, of course, leads the team in scoring after 22 games. 9 goals, that's first on the team. 10 assists, that's second on the team. 19 points is first overall. And the 7 power play points for Philip Forsberg is also first on the team. 3 of those are goals. So Philip Forsberg, 1/3 of his goals on the season have come on the power play. Of course, Roman Josi leads the team in assists with 11 points, total 13. 6 of those 11 assists come on the power play. And those are the only Nashville Predators after 22 games that are in double digits in points. Ryan Ellis was sitting at 9, but of course he's going to be out now for possibly a month. Mikael Granlund, 4 goals, looks great, but sitting on 9 points after 19 games, considering the amount of minutes, the amount of time, the opportunity as a first-line center over these last few games, I need to see those numbers improve dramatically. I love the game that I'm seeing out of him, and some team out there who's looking to make a run is going to get a hell of a power winger who's willing to put his shoulder down and go to the tough areas. I mean, Mikael Granlund's doing good things, but the numbers need to improve. You could say the same thing, though, about virtually anybody on this team. Victor Arvidsson still just sitting on 8 points. Yes, he's been more noticeable in games lately, but 2 goals, 6 assists, 8 points after 22 games? Not good enough. Matt Duchene, everybody knows, not good enough. 8 points after 22 games. 3 goals on the season. 2 of the goals I just mentioned came against the Florida Panthers in one game. Maybe the Florida Panthers are the key to Matt Duchene heating up. So we will look forward to him putting the puck in the net tonight at Bridgestone Arena. That needs to start happening. It needs to start happening on a regular basis. Look, we were all absolutely enamored with the way Matt Duchene debuted with this team. The first 8 games he was with this team, he was incredible. He was leading the offense. The Preds were first in goals for in the league during that stretch when he first started. It's been a decline ever since, and it's been a cooling off. And right now, as well as he is playing and as good of the little things he's doing and drawing penalties, at a certain point in time, that is simply not good enough for somebody who is supposed to be a star player, not just on the Nashville Predators, but a star player across the league itself. Matt Duchene is fading as a star in this league, and he is fading fast, and I need to see him get some jam that ends up putting the puck in the net. Not the jam that ends up putting the puck into the crook of the elbow on the goal line, as he's managed to do so many times already this season. That's right. I'm putting some heat on Matt Duchene. I want to see improved numbers, and I want to see that start tonight. For the Nashville Predators, of course, in net, we have a situation developing with UC Saros going on the shelf now day to day, and we don't know exactly what that means, the nature of the injury, listed as an upper body. Was it a concussion? Did he go into the protocol after the first period the other night? We simply don't have enough information to know how this will impact the team moving forward. But UC Saros, 5-5 on the season, a 3.10 and an .895 save percentage. Some of his best hockey had come just this last week against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and he wasn't playing bad against the Carolina Hurricanes. It's tough to keep the Canes off the board completely, especially when you gift them some power plays. But for the Predators, this is a very, very difficult moment. Obviously, that means Pekarinen is your goaltender of the moment. He took the loss the other night, and that's really tough. Comes in after the first period, only gives up 1, ends up with a loss. The record now 5-7, a 2.46 goals against, a .913 save percentage, though. Those numbers respectable, but how much workload can Pekarinen carry at this point? I don't buy into the thing that he's old, broken down, or anything like that. I saw a 41-year-old doughy-ass Tim Thomas go on and win a Vezina and a Stanley Cup, and Pekarinen is far from being out of shape or out of conditioning, but we do know, and perhaps we saw in the second game against Detroit last week, once you get Pekarinen out there for a couple games in a row, he starts to wear down. And when Pekarinen is not well-rested, his numbers, of course, suffer. With UC Saros now being out, don't forget, and Mosh is going to help us through this in a little bit, Connor Ingram is also not an option for the Nashville Predators at this point in time. So, coming into the season, UC Saros was penned in to be your starter. Connor Ingram was on the taxi squad, set to be your third goaltender in case of emergencies. And now you're down to just Pekarinen, who you had hoped to either split with Saros or play less games as a backup than Saros this season. So for the Nashville Predators, of course, they do have options. They do have the AHL in Chicago right now. They can make a call-up. They can make a signing. I will defer to Mastrodamus on this. That is his desk. That is his department. And I will let you tell everyone out there what's going on with the Preds in net. Very quickly, the Florida Panthers, Huberdeau, just a monster out there on the ice this season. 8 goals, 16 assists, 24 points. 10 of those 24 points come on the power play. So be very careful with this Florida Panthers team. Barkov becoming more and more of a beast each and every game. I see him out there. 21 games skated, 8 goals, 14 assists, 22 points. Again, 8 points of his 22 come on the power play. Patrick Hornquist has 9 goals, one of my favorite former Nashville Predators. 9 on the season, 5 of those coming on the power play. Are you seeing a theme here, everybody? The Preds' penalty kill is not very good, and the Florida Panthers' power play is designed to pick apart and take apart bad penalty kill units. I could keep going down. We mentioned how only two Predators are in double digits at this point. Well, two Florida Panthers are over 20. And then, let's see, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 total Florida Panthers players are at 10 points or better on the season. They are distributing it throughout the lineup. Coach Quinville has this team bought into the system, and they are playing some really good and strong hockey. Keith Yandle, also a part of this team. I believe we're going to see his 1,000th game at Bridgestone Arena. Not sure if it's this game or if it's the next game, but we'll be previewing it, and I'll make sure I give it a mention. That's a highly impressive effort. I feel like I've been watching Keith Yandle for 25 years, but apparently it hasn't been quite that long. Of course, you know Bobrovsky was supposed to be the guy in net with the big contract, but he has failed to deliver the goods for this Florida Panthers team, and Coach Quinville has found something in Chris Driedger, no doubt about it. Driedger, after 11 games played on the season, 7-2-2, a 2.25 goals against average, and a nice save percentage. We saw Driedger down in Florida, and he played good against this Nashville Predators team. Bobrovsky, just to give you his numbers, he's 2-0 on the season in three games, a 3.35 goals against, but an 8.79 save percentage. You know how I feel about a save percentage that starts with an 8. It's not acceptable. Not in the NHL, maybe in the beer leagues, but not in the NHL. We go back, we take a look at the one-off, the makeup game against the Carolina Hurricanes, and your lines shape up like this. Only the second meeting of the season between these two teams because of what happened with the COVID outbreak the last time the Canes were in town. Forsberg, Granlund, Tolvanen make up your first line. Yarncroke, Duchesne, and Grimaldi, Cousins, Halla, and Arvidsson. Janot making his NHL debut tonight for the Nashville Predators. Sissons and Olivier, welcome back to the lineup off of injured reserve. Josi Faro, Ekholm, Carrier gets his opportunity to get into the lineup. Harper gets another chance, and Benning has been on your third pair consistently throughout the season. UC Soros gets the start in net. Let's take you through it. 1:30 into the first period, Hamilton opts for a long shot instead of the breakaway. No idea why he would do that. Dougie Hamilton, simply way too talented to just let that long shot go and let it go wide. He had a clear path to the net, but he chose for the long bomb. 3:34 of the first period. Stahl gets behind the D. He gets a good scoring chance. So here in the first couple of minutes of this game, we see Carolina already using transition, using the rush, and using their speed to just blow right by the Nashville Predators defense. 5:14 of the first period. This is something that's going to come up with everybody on this show this morning. Nino Niederreiter off the box. 2 minutes for roughing on UC Soros behind the net. Look, UC Soros, by no means is he a tower of a man, but that doesn't mean you get a chance to go behind the net and slip an elbow or a shoulder right underneath his chin and end up putting him in what we believe is the concussion protocol after the first period. They got it right, giving him a penalty on the ice, but I believe that they completely missed the shot to the UC Soros' head, and the league, well, you know what they followed up with, absolutely nothing. That's why it will lead to a problem later, because hockey players have long memories, and so do you. That's why we need to get back to this game. 5:14, that's when Niederreiter went to the box. 0 shots on goal and limited zone time. Arvidsson did get a scoring attempt as the power play expired, but he didn't get all on it there at the back post. 10:03, Arvidsson open ice hit on Svechnikov at the blue line. That's how you do it, everybody. They want to come in with speed. They want to come in off the rush. Well, you have opportunities. You step up and you deny them that blue line. And Victor Arvidsson did that in an absolutely outstanding way. It was textbook and it was effective. And I love seeing that type of hit out there by a Nashville Predator. Open ice, denying the blue line, denying the zone, and dislodging the puck. That's the way you get things done. 11:24 the first period. Olivier and Paquette off the box. 2 minutes each for roughing. That happened between the benches. Leads to a 4-on-4 situation. This thing could have broke out and could have gotten pretty ugly fast. It was Olivier originally going in to have a discussion with Niederreiter and then having a discussion with several other players before Paquette decided to step in. On this 4-on-4 situation, of course, this favors the Carolina Hurricanes each and every time. Soros comes up with a save on Shea from the slot. A save, Soros with a save on Shea from the slot. I like the way I wrote that note. Good alliteration right there. But it would be Sebastian Aho picking up his 7th goal of the season on the 4-on-4. Josi can't gather the puck in. It was a quick pass to Aho and an even quicker finish. And I tried to tell everybody, if you're not aware of Sebastian Aho, you should be. He should be a household name in this league at this point. Canes up by one at Bridgestone Arena. 1607, Favreau's off to the box. 2 minutes for puck over the glass. And I'm telling you, this is a lightning strike by the Carolina Hurricanes. Yes, I did that on purpose. Trocheck scores immediately. It was a clean face-off win. Hamilton takes the shot. Trocheck and the close-up slow-mo of this thing from behind the net shows you just how good this deflection was. It was perfect for this Carolina Hurricanes team. They have a 2-0 lead at Bridgestone Arena, and everything we warned you about, the Preds are falling into, and now they have to chase this game the rest of the way. 18-29. Josi drives the net hard from the sharp angle. It looked like to me at this point, already in the first period, the captain had decided he had to put the entire game and the team on his shoulders, and Roman Josi continuously trying to drive the puck down the middle of the ice. He does get a good opportunity right here from the sharp angle, but again, he's trying to do it all by himself, and the Preds are just not able to compete pound for pound with the horsepower of the Carolina Hurricanes out there. 1931, Forsberg gets a chance off the feed from Granlund in the low circle and a rebound opportunity. The Preds get gifted a power play when Carolina gets a bench minor. Somebody must have said the wrong thing because it didn't look like there was too many men, and I don't think you can get hit with an illegal change when a player is injured going off the ice. So somebody must have had something to say. The Preds get gifted a power play going into the intermission. The carryover would be 139, down by two, and also being outshot 10-8 after the first period. Pekka-Rinne would have to come up on, or actually, let me go back one note. Juuse Saros comes out of the game at the start of the second period and was not seen on the bench in the traditional backup goaltender slot. That's how we knew there was definitely something wrong and an injury possibly coming. Pekka-Rinne in net. And then, immediately, Pekka-Rinne has to come up with a huge save, shorthanded, plus a rebound opportunity. And, of course, that happened off of the rush for Carolina. 2:57, Reimer makes a save on Granlund at close range. But at 4:48, Lorenz, his first goal of the season. Harper blocks a shot. Everyone loses sight of it as it enters the third dimension. Puck up in the air is always difficult to track, especially off of a block shot. It lands. Lorenz finds it before anyone else can. Converts. Carolina's up 3-0 at Bridgestone Arena halfway through this game. 11:01. Rinne has a huge save and close on Dougie Hamilton. 13:48. Rinne with another save on McGinn off the rush. And at 18:36, Rinne with a save on Svechnikov at close range. At this point, Carolina's just trying to put the Nashville Predators away before the end of this period. And Pekka-Rinne is legitimately keeping them in this thing. Favreau, 2 minutes for hooking at this point. It was the chicken wing call. We've done it 1,000 times. I hate it. They need to start calling guys for locking down that arm on the stick. That will alleviate this call. Intense pressure and possession by Carolina to end the second period. Shots on goal are even a piece at 21, but obviously Carolina getting the better of the batch now. A 3-goal lead. 36 seconds of power play carries over to the third period. Absolutely nothing happens on that for the Preds. 3:25 of the third. Josi hits the post from out high. 4:46. Posh gets a penalty. 2 minutes for hooking. Duchesne cannot get the rebound to go. That's the reference I made earlier about the jam on the goal line not going directly into the crook of the arm. Unfortunately for Matt Duchesne, just another opportunity where he cannot get the puck over the goal line, even though he's doing good and right things out there. Kelly Yarncroke does get his 5th goal of the season, and it is a power play goal for the Nashville Predators. Cousins has a pass, and it is redirected by Yarncroke. The old shot pass. Kelly Yarncroke, great job right there to redirect it into the net. His 5th goal of the season. The Preds at least on the board, but still down 3-1. 8:17 of the third. Ekholm's got his 3rd goal of the season. It was a long shot. It hit the Canes defender out high. This turned it into a messy puck for Reimer. It had a couple of bounces. It had some wobbles. And it had Cousins setting one hell of a screen as he's cutting across, taking the vision away from Reimer. So Matthias Ekholm ultimately ends up with the goal because it was ultimately his goal. His 3rd of the season. Preds now down 3-2 at Bridgestone Arena. Duchesne drives the net hard off of the rush. Reimer comes up with the save. Tolvanen gets a strong shot off of the rush at 15:50. Reimer makes the glove save up by the ear. This shot had a great opportunity to find its way to the back of the net, but unfortunately for the Preds, not able to get it in. 17:19, Rinne save on Niederreiter off the rush after a toe drag. 18:39, Reimer save on Forsberg in close range, and that would be the Preds' last good scoring opportunity because Roman Josi would be off to the box 2 minutes for holding at 18:47. Look, he prevented an empty net goal. He pinched. He did what he could. He reached out. He grabbed with the arm. It was a legit call. It's as it should have been. Empty net goal by Aho at 19:49. line. That's who was denied on the Roman Josi penalty. Aho gets another goal in this game. It's his eighth of the season. Carolina closes this thing out 4-2. The Preds do outshoot him 37-28, but that's kind of Carolina's rap, man. They get up, they get a big lead, and then they just let you skate around and shoot the puck a whole bunch, and when they have to dial it back in, they dial it back in. I mean, that's what Carolina does, man. You saw a perfect example of it the other night. That's the type of high skill, high speed that they bring off the rush, and they finish. And you give them opportunities, and they're going to beat you. They're going to do it each and every time. That's unfortunately for the Nashville Predators. Two losses in two games to Carolina with six more regular season matchups to go against that team. All right, we got to get to Master Thomas. We got to get to Sean C. Smith. We got to get to Brian Bass. I'm your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Sonny. Of course, you know that you're listening to Predneck Nation Radio, the ultimate one. He's going to get you all fired up for tonight's game against the Florida Panthers.
You know something, Predaholics? As if we didn't have a tough enough road ahead of us. Florida, Tampa, Dallas, a murderer's row in the Central Division. We are really suffering with the talent that we are losing to injury and COVID protocol. What upsets me more than anything else isn't the fact that we're losing people to injury. Look, that happens. That's hockey. What upsets me more is how we lost one of our players to an quote-unquote upper body injury. But we all know what happened when Nino Niederreiter took a run at Juice. And nobody, and I mean nobody, should take a run on your goalie and get away with it. I want more fire and passion from these guys, and I didn't see it against Carolina. I didn't see it when Juice got run. I didn't see it with the next man up mentality, the Survivor Series hockey mentality that this team has to have in order to survive a murderer's row. Because let's face it, when it comes top to bottom in this division, there is talent, there is speed, there is passion, there is heart. There are two Stanley Cup caliber teams. They proved it last year in this division. And if you don't show passion and fire and grit and determination and you stand up for each other and you play that Survivor Series hockey, then you might as well go ahead and cash it in. Because right now, that's what we look like. This is a team that is better than that. I have seen this team personally with my own two eyes play better than that. All of us know that there is fire on this team. And if you don't come out and you don't show them who is boss and you don't show them how we play hockey in Smashville, you will leave everybody in this team and in this city hungry. And we will always demand that you feed us more.
I'm Jussi Saros of the Nashville Predators, and you're listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie on Nashville Sports Radio.
At the end of the day, there's got to be a commitment to the game plan if you want to win. I love the way that they came back. I love the second half of the game. But unfortunately, when you're playing a team or teams like Carolina, they got Florida coming up, you just can't afford to have those starts and give them, you know, give them some freebies. You saw how talented and how fast they are. They're going to get enough chances on their own. You just can't continually give them opportunities to make you pay, and I think that's kind of what ultimately cost them.
Jussi Saros and Chris Mason bringing us back from break right there. Of course, Chris Mason, former Nashville Predators goaltender and current television analyst. He joined the Greg Pogan, John Burton show yesterday morning here on Nashville Sports Radio. It was a fantastic conversation. If you'd like to go back and listen to the rest of Chris's comments, and he was quite opinionated considering where he draws his check, you can do that at SoundCloud. Of course, that's how you get all the archives for this radio show as well, WNSR.com, the easiest way. Greg Pogan, John Burton show, weekdays 9 to 11. I make at least one appearance talking Preds hockey each and every day on that radio show. So I'd appreciate your support of that radio show as well. And if you want to call in, that's the opportunity you have to call in and talk Preds hockey on this radio station. Obviously, the way I eat up minutes and with my megalomania, there's no opportunity for anyone else, not even the Renegades of Puck, apparently. So let's go right into it. I'm going to do something crazy. I'm going to feed one-timers to a goaltender. You know him. He's on Twitter at GreekGoalie35. You know all the shtick. You know all that stuff. Mosh, I just want you to start in the first comments. I want Jussi Saros, 8 out of 10 in the first period. Injured by a hit to the head from Niederreiter. You tell me, as a goaltender, is that dirty or not?
There's two ways to look at this. So, and I hate kind of towing a line, but here's the thing. If it's any other position player that he does that to, and he clips him in the head like that, and that player goes down, it's probably a 5-minute major and a suspension. However, Saros, you know, grabs his head, doesn't go down, obviously, goes right back into his net, eventually is obviously deemed, you know, incapable of playing the rest of the game. So, do I think it's necessarily dirty? I don't think he did anything extra per se. If, you know, in that situation. He didn't lift his elbow up. He did clip him with the shoulder, of course. Saros, of course, as we know, is generously listed at 5'10". But you still caught him in the head. And most guys in that situation aren't going to skate around to the goaltender the way Niederreiter did. Most guys will pin themselves up against the boards, trying to block the puck from getting past and to create a turnover and a good scoring chance. So it was absolutely against, you know, the unwritten rule of making contact with netminders playing the puck behind the net. There's no doubt about that. But did he do anything extra per se? No, he skated through him, which, of course, you can't do. And unfortunately for Saros, of course, caught him in the head and does that. Niederreiter, look, Niederreiter's a 20-goal-a-year player in an 82-game season every single year of his career since year three. So he's not a dirty player. He doesn't, you know, I think the most penalty minutes he's had in his career is about 50. So he doesn't go out there and necessarily make dirty plays. If it was somebody like a Marchand or a Corey Perry, somebody like that who has a history, I'd be a little bit more up in arms about it. But I think it's an unfortunate circumstance for the Preds. He absolutely should have avoided contact, and that will prevent retaliation, of course, next time they play next week.
Say he could have avoided it. He should have avoided it. He made a choice and didn't, and the NHL is a slap on the wrist. So for Nino Niederreiter, that's bringing the jam, and as much as I don't like it, he helped his team to a victory the other night. He'll have to answer for that later on, but we'll talk about that another time. Rene comes into relief, gets two periods of action, 16-17 overall. I thought he was pretty solid. Man, that's tough to take the L when you only give up one goal against the Carolina Hurricanes, but that's how it works out in the NHL. Talk to me about Rene's performance the other night, Mosh.
Rene was solid. It's kind of weird because I think Rene almost – I think I've kind of gone over this before. Netminder comes in, and the team can actually give up an empty net goal, and he takes the loss for it. He did give up a goal, of course, in that situation. He played solid in relief, as he's generally done in relief of UC Saros. He comes in and plays a solid rest of the game and gets the guys kind of more level ground. And, of course, they make the comeback in the third period, you know, all for naught, of course. We've seen that all too many times this season with the Preds. They'd be down three goals and then try to make a comeback late. But Rene, again, good. It's good for him, though, for two periods of hockey to get back to playing the way we like. We're used to seeing Pecorino play after that Detroit performance about a week ago. So that's a positive, at least positive vibes anyway, going into tonight's game.
Mosh, going into the season, UC Saros was expected to be the number one, Pecorin expected to be the number two, and Connor Ingram expected to be the new number three with the taxi squad addition for this unique season. Now, of course, we know Connor Ingram is not available to this team, and UC Saros is listed as day-to-day. That leaves Pecorin, and what else are the Nashville Predators going to do as far as a game plan goes with goaltenders for at least the immediate future?
Well, as of right now, this is a problem when you have every team has three netminders. You know, obviously you have one on the taxi squad, but everybody has three goaltenders now. So there's not a whole lot of options available out there for the Preds as far as trying to sign somebody even for a short term. Now, Saros, they say, is day-to-day. They didn't put him on IR right away. They didn't say he's week-to-week or anything like that. So it may just be, I guess, the old-school mentality is, oh, he's got his bell rung a little bit, but he'll probably sit out the next couple of games, and we'll see what Rene does. They don't have back-to-backs yet, you know, this week, so they should be okay. Kuzmierz is their second goaltender. He'll dress up and be the backup. His one career start in the NHL is November of 2019 when he was with Toronto. Played against Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh. Gave up six goals on 38 shots. So here's a Finnish goaltender playing for the Preds now on the road against Pittsburgh, gave up six goals. So he fits pretty much right in with the rest of the Nashville Predators right now.
Hopefully for the Nashville Predators, they'll get good news on the goaltending front soon because it's getting pretty thin at the position right now. And the Preds are getting pretty thin at a lot of positions because of injuries. We saw Olivier back. Mosh, I like the physical jam that he brought to the game in his first game back off of injured reserve. We also saw Janot and Carrier get in the lineup for the first time. Whether the youth movement is wanted by this Nashville Predators franchise or not, injuries and where they are in the standings is kind of forcing the hand. Just talk to me overall about what you saw from some new players making debuts in the lineup, and just wanted to give these guys some mentions here on the show.
Yeah, Olivia, of course, getting back in there. Tanner Janot, of course, anytime you make your NHL debut, it's a special night. So good for him to finally make the dance, so to speak, even if it's on a temporary basis because of injuries, whatever the case is. I think May said it on your guys' show yesterday. You know, that's how you get an opportunity. A guy gets injured, you go in and you show what you can do. So, and that's how you get opportunities. Ben Harper, we've seen him. He got an opportunity because of, you know, lackluster play by somebody else in the roster. He goes in there, fits right in and has made a name for himself on the blue line. So opportunity knocks and people can answer it, or they can go back down to playing in the NHL or being on the taxi squad or healthy scratches, whatever the case is. But it's good to see some new faces in there. I think with the Ellis injury, you don't like missing Cunningham. He's not as key, of course, but you have Ryan Ellis injured for 4 to 6 weeks. You have Ekholm, of course, the hot name on the trade market right now. The youth movement could be very well fast-forwarded very quickly for the Nashville Predators. I know it's still got a little ways to go before the trade deadline, but right now, if there's ever a time where you're going to say we're going to go full-on sell and look to try to get some prospects and draft picks back in return, this is probably the time to do it right now. If you have basically Roman Josi and Ekholm back there, you trade Ekholm, it's Roman Josi, Fabro, and a hodgepodge of guys that have been nothing more than second or third line defensemen. So this would be the time to do it if they're going to go full on sell mode.
It would be Roman Josi, Dante Fabro, and a whole bunch of opportunities opening up for players to come in and get their opportunity to play in the NHL. It was the pivot game of the homestand out of the 5-game homestand mosh. Of course, this was a makeup game. The Preds dropped this one. Now 2-1 on the homestand. They have picked up 4 out of 6 points, and they do have 4 more points available to them. They did manage to beat the Florida Panthers once, but Joel Quenneville gifted them that victory by maybe not understanding the rule, or at least not exercising his challenge properly at the end of that game. We saw the Preds defeat Florida 6-5 in overtime, easily one of the most exciting games that this season. And then Florida went back to normal the next game, locked it down, a 2-1 win in that game. Driedger, the Florida Panthers have found something in him. 7-2-2 on the season, 2.25 goals against, a really nice save percentage. Mosh, talk to me about how you beat and score on Driedger, and also preview everything you think you're going to expect to see with the Florida Panthers over the coming days.
Well, the Preds have had their issues with Driedger since his NHL debut. Of course, he shut them out a couple of years ago. So, but Charlie, it seems like we're going to talk about this and say this a lot during this season, and we don't shy away from the truth here, obviously, with the Renegades. So, but for the Preds to succeed against Florida, they have to keep it low scoring. And I understand the season series. Well, the Florida won the low scoring game, and the Preds won a high scoring game. That's a complete anomaly. That was the most goals the Preds scored all year long, obviously with those 6 goals, and that was pretty much carried by Philip Forsberg. But Florida does not have a whole lot of household names at forward, per se. You have Huberdeau and Barkov, and of course, you know, we're all familiar with Patrick Hornquist and what he does, who's had a major resurgence down there, 9 goals for him. But they have, like you mentioned, 9 players in double-digit scoring this season. The Preds have 2, 1 forward, and that's Philip Forsberg, and that's it. So Coach Quenneville has had a major impact down in South Florida. I really think the success of this club between this year and next will determine what direction the Florida Panthers go. They could be major sellers by next season or legit Stanley Cup contenders. It just depends on how they perform, because they have a ton of expiring contracts over the next 2 seasons. So Florida is going to be a very interesting team to watch, as we've seen this season. They were kind of a wild card. I said they could probably finish third, all the way down to 7th, depending on how things went, because I wasn't sure about their goaltending. Driedger solidified that. So even with just an albatross of a contract that they gave Sergei Bobrovsky's goals against since he's come on board with Florida is over 3 in 60 games. So that's a bomb they're going to have to deal with eventually. But Nashville, got to keep it low scoring and stay out of the penalty box against Florida. They will absolutely murder you if you take stupid penalties.
Mosh, without those 6 goals in that 1 game against Florida, the first game of the season against the Panthers, the Preds would be down to 45 goals scored for the season. It's not a drought anymore. It's a major issue. It's a major problem, and it's preventing the Nashville Predators from finding themselves being able to play the style they want to play, because they're always behind, they're always chasing, and they are always trying to match the other team's style and gameplay instead of worrying about what they do. So one of the most brilliant things I thought I heard May say yesterday was this Preds team, and part of that clip was on the intro coming back to your segment, was that this Preds team dips its toe in the water too much to start games and tries to feel it out and see what the other team is going to do and present to them instead of going out and taking it to the other team. I think the Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes, these are examples of teams that bring it to their opponent off the opening puck drop. Mosh, I'm telling you right now, after what I saw between Carolina and Florida the other night, I can't wait to watch those two teams get it on for a 7-game series in the playoffs, and I do think that they are on a collision course for that. Going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk about that a couple of months down the road, though, Mosh. We're still only getting to the midway point of the regular season, and the Nashville Predators right now not a factor in the playoff hunt, but with it only being an 8-game division and you play all of your games in that division, division. Somebody could drop off. The Preds could have a hot week, and you never know what can happen. We'll be here to cover it from now until the end of the season, no matter how good, bad, or ugly it gets. And Mosh will be here with me each and every episode of Predneck Nation Radio in the second period. Reach out to him on Twitter at GreekGoalie35. Man, I appreciate the hockey conversation. Sorry for feeding you one-timers. I know you goalies are used to stopping them, not taking them, but you did a damn fine job at it this morning, Mosh.
I'll do my best, Charlie. We'll talk to you again soon.
That guy's the best right there. Got to get to SCSOTF. He's got the intel. He's been doing some outstanding work these last couple of days. He's brought you practice reports. He's brought you updated information, injuries, and he's also conducted a couple of interviews that I want to get him to plug on this radio show right here. This radio show is called Predneck Nation Radio. I am your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Sonnier, and you are, in fact, in the trenches with the Renegades of Puck.
I'm Matt Duchesne of the Nashville Predators, and you're listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie on Nashville Sports Radio.
Listen, Matt, between you and me, we got to have a talk real quick. Just a quick one. You wanted to be here. You desired to be here. Now you are here. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to take Instagram photos in your canoe with your dog and your three-star T-shirt showing how much you love the life and how much you love Tennessee? Are you going to put the puck in the damn net and make this Preds fan base love you? Because they will. They'll come around in like a week's time. If you put two goals in tonight against Florida and you get on a hot run, Preds fans will gladly come around. But they're about tired of it. They've seen just about enough, and they've heard enough about a team doing the right things, competing hard in the third period, bringing the jam, drawing penalties, going to the hard areas. At a certain point in time, results have to come at the end of that. I'm as patient as anybody when I see a guy bringing the jam, when I see him putting in the effort out there. I'm willing to give him the opportunity. I'm willing to give him the time. We're talking about 22 games now. It's a 56-game schedule. If you ain't getting hot by now, are you ever? Here to talk to me about this and all things Nashville Predators hockey, you can find his work at ontheforecheck.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, and I recommend that you do that. He has the intel that you need to know, and he updates it throughout the day. At SCSOTF is how you find him on Twitter. I'll say it again, and I'll slow it down for you. At SCSOTF, Sean C. Smith on the forecheck. It's brilliant. Sean, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Charlie. I'm ready to go today.
I'm wound up too, my friend. I got to tell you, just start with this one. Let me feed you some one-timers as well, because I've been all over the place today and just in a trance over here, eating up everyone's minutes. Take a look back and tell me about Carolina. And you gave us a warning going into that game about the lesser competition the week before and the better competition coming up. Just follow up on that conversation and where we left it off.
Yeah, you know, I gave that warning, and I gave it in advance of the game against what would be much stiffer competition than the team had been facing. And the reality is, when I gave that warning, I didn't know that we were going to lose Ellis, Cunnan, and Johansson. So, you know, really, it's like you got to give a warning, and then you've got to elevate that warning when you get the rest of that information. With those players out, I was expecting a blowout. And I think, honestly, Hines did a really good job of filling in the gaps on the team with the players he had to work with. And I think we started to get a glimpse of what that youth movement may look like. We saw Tanner Jeannot. We saw the reintroduction of Matthew Olivier and the return of Alex Carrier. And, of course, Jeannot did not score his first goal in his first game. Olivier did not have a marquee fight, and Carrier did not morph into Roman Josi in front of our eyes. But I think the young guys put in a solid night's work, and I think Olivier should be on that roster tonight. I think Carrier should be on that roster tonight. I think Jeannot should be on the roster tonight. And if not Jeannot, I think you might see Yakov Trenin. He's there. He's available. But it is important to remember Olivier and Jeannot are line mates in Milwaukee. And a season's worth of chemistry between those two should go a long way right now.
I agree with you on that. And I wouldn't mind seeing him get another opportunity. It's a nice story at this point. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in the future. After all, it is going to be a youth movement one way or another at some point this season. Saros, Niederreiter. You heard my opinions earlier. You heard Mastrodamus' comments on it. I felt it was across the line. I felt that he could have and should have avoided it, but he didn't, and he got a slap on the wrist for it. Sean C. Smith, take me through it. UC Saros listed as day-to-day at this point. Thank you for the update on that. Talk to me about your comments on the hit itself, the play itself, and the follow-up on the discipline.
Yeah, it's not good. Again, I kind of go with what Mosh said on that. I don't think that it was just absolutely and necessarily dirty. I do feel like he could have avoided it. I feel like there could have been some more effort made, but it happened. I don't like the way it happened. I don't like what happened as a result. But the reality is a guy on the opposing team took a shot at one of your guys, and a fairly cheap shot at that. And it was at your goaltender to make it even worse. And as far as reaction goes, yeah, there was a penalty. Okay, that's fine. But Olivier took the strongest action against Niederreiter when he checked him hard through the open bench door. I really like that. That was a good moment. And it was a great hit. And then Olivier scuffled with Paquette, and that got the teams in a 4-on-4, and Aho scored during that 4-on-4. So the net result of everything is that your goaltender is day-to-day. You got scored on, and the guy that took the shot got fined $5,000. Now, Niederreiter makes $5.25 million a year. He's probably making around $25,000 a day this season. It's not going to hurt him. And I don't want to be the one advocating for violence here, but I don't think anyone, not on the Predators, not the league, has made Niederreiter answer for what he did. And so I think March 9th is the next time the Preds are going to see Carolina, and that message better get sent very early.
Sean, I circled that date as well. Hockey players have long memories. And I think in the game itself, perhaps not everybody knew exactly what had happened. That does happen from time to time. But we all know once they had a chance to get in the room, and now that they've had meetings and practice since, everyone's had a chance to see that hit. Everyone now knows exactly what happened. And Nino Niederreiter will have to answer for his actions at some point, probably on March the 9th. Let's get through to the next topic that I want to bring up with you. And I want to bring up the Jam, man. Talk to me about this team and the Jam. Are they bringing it or not?
Well, you know, maybe it was the headshot to Saros that finally did it. But the team did find some Jam in the second, the third period. But my question is, why does it always take adversity to bring it out in the team? I mean, is it possible, and this is a big stretch, maybe it's not. I don't know. Is it possible that we, as fans watching the game, are wrong about this? And is it possible the team is actually playing hard in the first and sometimes the second, but not getting the results? And that's why we're misinterpreting it and saying, oh, they're not playing very hard because they're not scoring. And I would really like to give the team the benefit of the doubt, but guess what? Mattias Ekholm is not giving the team the benefit of the doubt. He was very candid about it after the game. He said they shot themselves in the foot in the first period by not coming out to play. And, you know, Ekholm's a guy that plays well with emotion. And so I want to know what it's going to take to get the team to start out by bringing the Jam in the first period. I mean, a headshot to your goalie can do it. A three-goal deficit could do it. But that shouldn't be what brings it out in this team. It may be getting to the point in the season where external pressure could be the thing that brings that Jam out early in the Predators. I mean, they were already on shaky ground despite cobbling together some wins against Columbus and Detroit. Then they lost multiple players. Then they lost to Carolina. And now they're up against Florida. They're fourth in the league. They're third in the Central. And they're 1 point out of tied for first. And it's going to be a challenge.
Sean, when the defending Norris Trophy winner and clearly one of the best skaters and defenders, I know people like to give him criticisms at times, but Roman Josi is an expert back there on the blue line. That's a reason he gets 26 minutes a night. When he gets looking like he's getting caught flat-footed and the team is getting behind him in the first few minutes of the game, and it's not just him, I just single him out because he is the captain, he is the top defenseman on the team, but the Preds were getting caught lethargic, getting caught flat-footed early in that game, and they knew they had to come out and play strong in the open against Carolina, who had just played the night before and traveled the night before and all of that good stuff. They failed to start the game the way any of us had anticipated. And you heard Chris Mason say that as well. Dipping your toe in the water is not how you start a game. You go out there and you jump in the deep end and you play. I want to flip it over to Florida now. We heard Mosh's talk about Driedger, how you beat him. A little bit about this Florida Panthers team, but Sean, I want to get your opinion as well, because I think a lot of people are just waking up to the fact that this Florida Panthers team is much better than expected this season. That 13-4-4 record is impressive. 30 points, 1 point out of first place, as you mentioned. Talk to me about how this Nashville Predators team beats that Florida Panthers team.
Well, you know, the answer to that question is the same thing we just talked about. It's Jam. They're going to have to try to set the tone early. Big emphasis is on early mistakes and the failure to come out of the gate strong. You better believe the game plan tonight is to play a strong physical game early on and to give Florida no quarter, Look for the checks to get finished. Look for aggressive forechecking and backchecking. Look for the Predators to do everything they can to prevent easy access to the offensive zone. Look for the Predators to go steel curtain style at the blue line to force dump-ins. And look for the team to parlay that in an attempt to frustrate the Panthers using guys like Cousins to get them to react emotionally and get called for some penalties. Somehow, Panthers have a penalty kill that's below league average. With the Predators' power play heating up, that could be a great way to gain an advantage on the ice and get some points on the board. This is what needs to happen. And if you don't see this style of play happening early, look out, because it could get a little rough. And yeah, on the ice, because if you recall, Florida was not a team that wanted to back down from the rough stuff last time. But I don't just mean on the ice. Things can get a little bit rough everywhere else for the team as well.
Coach Quinville has this team playing good. They're bought in, they're believing, and guys you've never even heard of are bringing strong performances each and every night for the Florida Panthers. They're bringing the jam. They found a goaltender, and that coach behind the bench, I mean, he's reliable and got about as solid a resume as anybody in the league right now. This Florida Panthers team is for real. They're a contender, and the Nashville Predators better be careful with them over the next couple of games here at Bridgestone Arena. Got to find some more points. Only getting 4 points on this homestand in five games is not going to be good enough. The Predators are not a good enough team on the road to make up for any deficiencies in the home record. So they have to come out strong. They have to play this team tough. Sean, looking forward to watching these games. I'm impressed by the Florida Panthers, and I want to see how the Nashville Predators respond after that Carolina game. I need a much stronger start than I've seen from the Preds in virtually every game they've had this season. So I'll be tracking your work at SCSOTF on Twitter throughout the day. I know that you'll have some updates and also all of your outstanding articles at On the Forecheck. Sean, you've been doing some good work. Plug the articles that you've been posting. Plug the interviews that you've been doing over the last couple of days so that people can get out there and read that as they're waiting for the game.
Yeah, I just had the opportunity to interview Carl Taylor, who's the head coach in Milwaukee. And, of course, he's working with the Chicago Wolves this season. And if you're looking at a youth movement and more players coming in for whatever reason, those guys are going to come from the AHL. Now, of course, the team is splitting the Chicago Wolves of the Hurricanes, and he is not the head coach of the Wolves, but you'd better believe he's with his players. And I talked to him a lot about what he actually does down in the AHL to develop those players. And we spoke specifically about Eli Tolvanen and Matthew Olivier and what they did between their last appearances with the team and their appearances with the team this season to get them to the point where they're sticking on this roster. And it is incredible and insightful, and I've had a blast talking to him and a blast writing it, and that should be coming out later today at On the Forecheck, and it's going to be a great article.
Sean, the crew over at On the Forecheck is doing absolutely fantastic work right now. I'm enjoying following each and every one of you. Please tell the staff nothing but stick taps, love and respect to each and every one over there. You guys keep bringing the grind and keep bringing that jam, and we'll keep following, reading, supporting, and listening. And the people will also continue tracking you at SCSOTF on Twitter, and they can also find you in the third period of this radio show all season long. Sean, you're the best. Thank you so much, man.
Anytime, Charlie. I'll be ready to go when you need me.
Sean's fired up, man. He's been bringing the jam to the trenches this season, and it has made this radio show better than it has ever been. Right now, this lineup, these Renegades in the trenches, I'll take on anybody. You give me a 5-on-5 with Mosh and Net, I'll take you on. No doubt about it, we're undeniable. The Renegades of Puck in the trenches, each and every game day, live at 5, or maybe perhaps before the next game day. There's your hint. Stick taps, love, respect. I'm your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saunier. You have been in the trenches with the Renegades of Puck.